well, eventually. That was Wood Bees by Scritti Politti. And, we've primed you for it now. So there was a great story about the sequencer on that record.
Yeah,
which I'd love to hear.
It was I got to New York and we wanted to use a Roland TR-808, which was a new drum machine, pretty hard to get hold of at the time.
It was state of the art.
It was state of the art thing. And the only person that we knew who had one was Brian Eno, who was living downtown New York at the time, and Fred Marr, being the young kind of, I don't know, gadabout that he was, he knew Brian. In fact, he was dating the same girl as Brian, unbeknownst to Brian. And a woman with a great passion for gambling. Chinese woman, extraordinary stories I won't. And anyway, so he kind of got hold of Eno's 808 and brought it along, and we were mucking around with this track, and none of us quite knew how to program the 808, but we sort of half programmed this rhythm into it, and it suddenly flipped into something that Eno had programmed down in Chinatown for, like, you know, a bar of Eno's programming accidentally cropped up, and we thought, blimey, that sounds pretty good. So it stayed and is there to be heard to this day. And I don't think Brian,
and to have the publishing rights ever knew. Contested.
Oh, he seems quite a jovial chap. I'm sure he'll probably quite enjoy the irony
much.
Of it.
He might be more upset about the girlfriend than the drum machine.
Yes. But there is something very interesting that happens also with your voice on this record. I mean, I'm wondering what's, because you've embraced a kind of a black sound, and you're kind of approaching soul, but it's not a kind of complicated approach to that very expressive style of singing than...
Yeah, it was inexpressive almost by, partly because I could have done R&B vocals.
Right.
But more significantly because I didn't want to.
I think we're quite glad that you didn't come on being Joe Cocker or something.
Yeah. and that was, again, to do with the whole business of being mistrustful about ideas of truth and expressivity and honesty of voice. You know, people used to say about, you know, questions about what's your real voice, and that always bugged me. You know, because it's my voice and I can do whatever I like with it, and B, the idea of authenticity is always politically problematic, and so a lot of that Scritti stuff when I went to New York was all about authenticity, expressivity, honesty. I mean, and again, the technology kind of really just helped bring that to the fore. It was something that I'd first noticed listening to Kraftwerk, you know, that this was... It's difficult to imagine now, but the first time you heard sort of grooves made by machines, that's quite an extraordinary thing.
So in a way, you know, some of your detractors at the time, the sort of people that were actually putting together Scritti Politti alongside, seeing it almost as a kind of movement of bands at the time, even though I certainly wouldn't have associated with some of the other bands. They would have been, they were sometimes would describe you as plastic soul, and in a way, they were. Would you say they were almost right in a way?
Yeah. Plastic soul, crikey.
It's a ghastly expression.
The concrete people
with
plastic souls.
You're asking questions about the authenticity.
Yes.
Of it, so in a way, it was
obviously there's never just a simple dimension or agenda to these things. So it was as my dear friend used to say, partly a lot of things. And yes, it was at one and the same time a kind of expression of real, you know, real love for black popular music, but also, you know, my take on it also being informed by the politics and, for want of a better word, philosophy that I was, you know, exploring at the time. So it came out at the end.
We skipped over the Songs to Remember album, which of course had a track on it called Jacques Derrida.
It did.
And you did get to meet him later.
Yeah, I met him a couple of times. It was very scary, actually. The first time he asked to meet me in Paris for some celebration of his, and our meeting was somewhere near the Beaubourg, and I turned up and there were cameras and microphones all pointed at me ready to record
No, it sounds very relaxing.
This it was, and like, you know, and I think, oh, my, if I wasn't scared enough already, you know, for sort of all these people with headphones on and boom mics, thinking, is, you know, what pearls of wisdom might I come up with? And of course I hadn't, nothing to say of any great interest at that point to the great man, sadly.
I'm sure that's not true, but I imagine that he was actually rather chuffed to have had a pop song written about
him.
He was
very delighted, we decided that that we had both embarked on the same project, really, at some point. At least that's what we decided after dinner, after a few drinks.
Okay.
We were engaged in the same thing. And I met him a couple of years ago, again. And I went to visit him at his house. And still, I mean, the most wonderful and gracious man. And I think, you know, would still, from his perspective, think that we were engaged. I think he aspired to a musicality in his work. That was something we talked about a lot. Anyway, enough about the great man.
Okay, well, I'm going to play another track. This time I'm going to play "Oh Patty." The obvious reason for this is
Miles Davis.
Is Miles Davis on it? How on earth did you meet Miles?
Miles did a cover version of one of the songs on the Cupid and Psyche album. Which I didn't know he was going to do, and someone at Warner Brothers rang me up and said, "Did you know Miles had covered it?" And so
that's perfect way, wasn't it?
Perfect way, yeah. And very soon, I can't remember exactly how, but we you know, there were phone numbers were exchanged pretty soon after, and we met up, and that's how I got to meet Miles, and indeed he came and played on this song.
In a typically economic solo, it has to be said, it's a beautifully placed set of notes.
Well, I've actually got the whole session. I videoed the it was just me, Gamson, and Miles in the studio, and no one's ever seen it, but I do have it all on tape.
Oh, here it is.